Where do you catch yourself where you've made rules that you feel you have to stick to or you have to live with?
Hi, and welcome to episode 79 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And today we are going to answer a listener question about prints, and our main topic is about the idea of black and white thinking. And we don't know where that conversation is going to go, so we're just going to see what happens. But before we find out what happens, what are you working on this week, Alice?
So I've realised that there's an event coming up in September that we weren't sure that was going to go ahead or not, but it is, so that's very nice. It will be in East Sussex, and I will be showing with the Cowshed Collective, which sounds fun, doesn't it? So I've been having a little bit of a review of current work that I've got available, and thinking about what other pieces I want to kind of bring to fruition in that time. And really, I've got three mid-size pieces that I'm working on that are quite landscape in feel or form. And I've been using your little mini studies that we did as a way to help shift those. And it's quite interesting because they're giving me a little bit of a grounding, which makes me feel freer in the way that I can approach the painting of those, because I don't want them to end up as I want them to be pushed off edge more than being fully representational landscapes. So it's having those is helping me go off track a little bit more. And I've been thinking more about colour, not necessarily pre-mixing colour, but just working with colour in a slightly more aware way rather than completely random, let's chuck everything on and see what happens way. And it's been nice. I'm enjoying it, actually.
So is it the compositions of the little ones that is helping?
It's almost the simplicity of them. So that, and another exercise that I've been doing for myself with limited color within a sketchbook, it's just really just pulling me back towards a degree of simplicity. And yet I know that if it were that simple in a big painting, it would be dull. So it's struggling with this sense of, yes, this is something that looks great on a 3-inch basis because there's a single sweep of something. But if there was just a single sweep of that color on a big canvas, you'll be like, nah, yeah. You know, you can see it in one glance, and I don't want that in my painting. So, but when you've got that as an idea, then within that space of, okay, there's a big section of blue, how much can you do within that?
That
changes scale and that gets kind of quite marky and scratchy and intimate, and then you cover it with a big sweep of another version of blue. So you're building up. So it looks visually quite simple, but when you get up to it, there's an awful lot going on in there. So yeah, that's what I've been experimenting with on those three. It's been nice.
Yeah, I've got a big board that I got stuck on last year because I got a big sweep of blue actually going across, and it's beautiful the way the paint went on over the texture that was underneath. But like you say, it's not enough, but then it was beautiful, and then it's just stuck. So, until I decide. And actually, that's for me this week. I got back into painting. When I teach my course, which has started now, part of what I do is film myself working and try to illustrate how I work, the way I'm asking the students to work, how I follow a feeling of being aligned with what's happening in order to make my paintings. And it's just another way of trying to teach. But what's good about it is, I forgot this from last year, it makes me more thoughtful about what I'm doing. Yeah. Because yeah, I'm having to explain it. And so some people have said, oh, I'd hate that, having to explain what I'm doing. But for me, it's really good because I'm impulsive and tend to rush ahead without thinking things through, having to stop and think. So one of the things in this week I'm talking about in the course is getting people to think about what they love and do more of it. And so what I did was I came back in, and having not painted properly really for a few months, I came in and, as you do, was faced with these paintings which don't feel like they even belong to me, and you've got to kind of get to know them again.
Yes.
So I got two or three that I really like that aren't quite finished but are close, and I went through and thought about, why do I really like them? What is it about them that's really working for me? And what is it about this one over in the corner that just isn't? And it turned out that what was always the same mistake I tend to make is I get really in love with paint effects and bits of collage. And on this particular painting, there were some lovely textures from sanding and there was some amazing collage. So I painted around it all trying to do something, and there was no point to the painting at all. The only point to it was, here's some nice bits of texture. So having realized that and talking to them and explaining to the camera, rather, why, what had happened, and then thinking, well, what do I like here? And what do I want this painting to be? I want it to be a light version of what I've achieved in a darker painting. I wanted a light to contrast it. And so just having that clarity, I went over this thing. I covered every bit of texture that I liked. I just didn't even, you know, and I'm at the moment really enjoying very wet paint, acrylic, but very wet and drippy and mushy knit with a cloth and softness, which is always in my paintings. But in this particular one I was covering up, I'd tried to put edges in, which are never me and doesn't work. So the point of all this is that it all got covered up. It's not a finished painting, but I just feel so much better about it. And I'm realizing again that I need that constant, that push to think and just pause and not rush in. And that once I got clarity about it, it was easy to know what to do.
It's lovely when it gets to that stage, isn't it?
Mm.
Takes a bit of time. I'll tell you something else that's also fed in a little bit this week in a very vaguely muffled way. I've been watching Little Fires Everywhere, and there's an episode in there where she's talking to her art tutor at an art college in New York in the 80s, and this idea comes up: either put something new into the world or discover what is uncanny or terrifying about you. And so that's just, it's a nice, I don't know, it's just been marinating in my mind, this idea of, because often we talk about like putting you into your painting, and I think often you kind of think, well, what is that? I don't know, what does that mean? I mean, what does it mean to be me in my painting? Whereas I think for me, this idea is much more helpful. You know, what are you doing within this that is new in the world? There has to be a purpose of this painting existing. And it is either you exploring something that is new or different that you haven't done before. And also this edge of doing something that I like the word uncanny. I don't know how it applies yet to my work. But I mean, I often have the sense of curiosity in the work. But this edge of being on the verge of being not terrifying in a scary way, but unknown. Rather than just creating something that's pretty, you know,
yeah,
because balance between rough and polished and that kind of thing, I think is important.
Yeah, because when I hear terrifying, I went straight past new in the world, because I thought, okay, well, that's not going to be me, because paintings have all been done before. But uncanny and terrifying, I think the way you put you in, we've talked about it, I think the way you put you into your paintings is anytime you do the thing that feels really good to you and is unique to you. But terrifying, I think the best paintings are the ones where I really put in, somebody else can feel all the emotion in them.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine said, I said, this painting is like, just, that's what it's like in my head. Because he was saying, well, what is it? And I said, that's what it's like in my head. And he went, oh my God. Like, well, I don't want to be in there then. And that's the terrifying, like, that's the part I think. I can't imagine I'm ever going to put something completely new into the world. That would be fantastic. But it is completely new.
Every painting is completely new because it never existed before.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that's astonishing about painting, isn't it? Is that every painting is new. It's like music. It's the same seven notes.
I was thinking that about song the other day. I heard a new song that I really like, and I thought, how has this song never been written before?
Yeah.
In the history of humankind, how has that not happened before?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a good way of thinking about it. I don't know about uncanny. What's uncanny? What does uncanny even mean? It's strange or mysterious, especially in an unsettling way.
Yeah.
So she had an uncanny feeling that she was being watched, is the example. Strange or mysterious. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's good. I like that.
I think it's just this slight unsettled, unresolved thing. Yeah. And for me, it's to do with, you know, just being care, not that you don't tidy things up or pretty things up too much. You know, you could just leave some of that rawness, but it has to be just balanced. But I just think it's really interesting how sometimes you just hear a word or a phrase or something and you just think, oh, that kind of chimes with me. I'm going to take that on somehow. You never know how.
So moving on to our main topic, you had this idea because you read in a book. So why don't you tell us about the book and the idea, and then we can go from there.
Okay, so the book is called Coaching the Artist Within by Eric Maisel. And he's quite a famous, creativity coach. When was this published? Quite a long time ago, I think. 2005, and I read it a while ago, this book, and I thought, oh, it would be good to come back to it, read it again. I'm not sure it would be in my top list of recommendations. I can always tell whether it's a book that I've really enjoyed. I'm afraid with these kind of books, I gave up of the idea of don't fold down corners, don't write in a book. All of these kind of books have pencil scribblings, underlinings, folded corners. And so I can tell how much I got from a book by simply flicking through it and seeing how many scribbles there are in the edges. And there are some in sections, but overall as a book, I didn't find it enormously full of like, ooh, revelations, in the same way that some of the others that we've previously spoken about have. But this idea, it's basically a step on from the idea of just catching your thoughts in that automatic black and white thinking. And it's talking about the idea of dualistic thinking. So what he says is, we possess powerful reasons for creating. It makes use of our potential. It connects us to our long-held dreams and allows for an intellectually rich life, provides us with the satisfaction of accomplishment and more. We also possess powerful reasons for not creating. It's real work, takes more of our mind, heart, and hands than we're accustomed to using. It provokes anxiety. It opens us up to the possibility of mistakes and messes. Most people let the negatives outweigh the positives and avoid creating. Many select creative projects that don't do their talent or spirit justice, but that possess the apparent virtues of being easy and manageable. Only a few people opt for the creative life with all its positives and negatives, and I'm sure that you hope to count yourself in this group. So what he's talking about is that we have a tendency to put ourselves in one box or the other. So we choose simplicity over complexity, or we choose subject over process. And we tie ourselves in knots, kind of saying, oh, well, which one am I? Which one is my work? Which one is more important? And what he's really saying here is that the goal of a creative person is to honor both parts of any dualistic pair by giving yourself the power to choose what quality that you are going to bring into your creative process at any time. So it's not a matter of choosing one or the other. It's a matter of being aware of what that kind of line of continuum is, and then you thinking, well, what am I going to do? What serves me today? And what serves you on Monday might be very different to what serves you on Thursday. But what we tend to do as creatives is think that we need to put ourselves strongly in one camp or the other to get a strong sense of self. And actually, we're better off by just going, do you know what? I can be both. I don't have to make a decision on this.
I heard something on, do you know the podcast Andy J Pizza? The podcast is Creative Pep Talk with Andy J Pizza, and he was interviewing someone, and I cannot remember the person or the episode. I'm sorry, but the point that matters is this, that they were talking about this idea that someone will say, I don't know what my style is because I love intricate line drawing and I love big, bold abstracts. And the guy he was interviewing said, maybe that's your style. Maybe you have to choose. Maybe your style, the things that make you weird are the things that make you unique. And so you can put those two unique things together and do both. And so in your case, you were saying you might do one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, but also you might do both together. You might not have to pick, I want to paint portraits and give and have abstract style brushstrokes and loose work. Maybe you can do portraits in an abstract and loose way. But I'm seeing on my course in the first week, so many people who are either experienced painters and they want to change their style now, or they want to do something new, they feel a push to do something new, but they want to know now what it's going to be. And beginners who are going, okay, I found out I like using bright colors, so am I going to be making big, bold, bright, abstract paintings for the rest of my life? It's a very black and white, straight to, okay, I have to make a decision, as you were saying, I have to decide what I'm going to be. As opposed to, okay, why don't I try today using some bold colors and see what happens?
Yeah, I think it's deeper than what materials you use or what the outcome is. I think it's more about the sense of how we see ourselves and the behaviors we choose. So, I mean, the example that he gives is, I understand that I have a real desire to do personal work, and I also understand that if I want to communicate that work to others and or make a living, I must acknowledge and deal with the marketplace. So you've got to make sense of both of those aspects. So it's not about choosing a style. It's about these kind of conflicts that we have within the way we might think about our work or approach our work or think about how we ought to approach what we're doing either inside the studio or outside the studio. And rather than just focusing on one of those, it's going to be more beneficial to you if you just say, yes, both of those things are available to me. So rather than thinking, oh, I need to be disciplined or I need to be flexible in my approach, we all have times where we need to be more disciplined, and we all have times where we need to be more flexible. And we tend to kind of tie those things with how we see ourselves, how our sense of standing is. I mean, I know I have a hard issue with, if I stop doing something, I think I'm being lazy about something, which is rubbish. It just means that I've chosen today not to do that thing. And so it's something that I've been, I suppose, aware of thinking about how we just put those judgments on ourselves, and that's the thing that holds us back. It's not about necessarily what's going to come out in our work, but about these labels that we put either on, it's not just emotions, is it? It's habits, really. Like how you don't have to tie yourself into one particular habit or way of working. And that there are going to be some times where you need to be focused and disciplined, and other times where you need to be more relaxed about it. And that it's okay to move. I just, this whole sense of moving as seamlessly as you can between different states of being, I think, A, it's massively beneficial in a mental health kind of way, not to get trapped in a particular feeling or state of being, but I think we do it with our work and how we approach our work too.
Yeah, I was thinking while you were talking, because I think this does apply to style and the way you work as well as attitude.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of attitude then, okay, or approach, and I have this thing, my painting is all about emotion, all about feeling. Therefore, I have to be emotional and feeling while I'm painting it.
I was going to ask you that when you were talking about it earlier.
Yeah, and actually, this time that I spent, it was only an hour or so going through the work and choosing the ones I really liked and thinking about why, and then thinking, okay, what do I want this to be? That was a really good switch for me, rather than just diving in. Then I did dive in. Then I did paint freely and not thinky at all. But the thinky was really important. And I'm going to try and be more aware that there is a way. I've always struggled with how to go between the two.
Mm.
If I think while I'm, I think we talked about this with Brian. If I think while I'm painting, I think I talked about this with Brian, you know, when we were on a conversation with Brian, my friend Brian, I think we said, no, but it's just the way I said that was funny. But I think we talked about it in that episode that bringing the thought in during the painting doesn't work for me, but bringing it in before really yes. did. And it's something I'm just learning now. So there is that. Definitely I've had this feeling of, no, I don't want to be an intellectual painter, so mm-hmm. I have to just do it. And that's a false choice. I don't have to be either or.
So that brings us on then to, so not only are we talking about flexibility between these two different extremes, or the rules that we might create for ourselves around how we have to be at what our work has to be, but we're also talking about, a lot of this is about recognizing when you're doing it yourself, when you're in one stage or another, and making assumptions about what that means. So it might be that for you, you know, because my painting isn't a political intellectual exercise, it has to be really emotional. And that's what gives my painting meaning. So that becomes hard, because then you've all of a sudden got a whole load of standards that you've got to live up to in this, like, what does it mean to create a painting that gives emotion? Do you have to be in that state before you even do it? What happens if you suddenly create a painting that doesn't have that emotional feel to it? Maybe there's a painting that has a different feel to it. And then I think what's interesting for us as artists is, and I certainly used to feel this, I certainly used to feel that a lot of my paintings had to be, they felt like they had to be maybe stronger or more dramatic. And then sometimes paintings would happen that weren't that strong or dramatic. They were more sensitive, they were more gentle. And then it kind of shocks you. You think, well, what is this? Is this my painting? Is this the painting that's gone off track? Is this relevant? Or
does it fit,
is this
with all
forward?
The others? Will it look bad if I put it with the others, because it doesn't look the same as the others? Yeah. And actually, I said that to you about something I'd done a few weeks ago, and you said, well, I could tell this was you. I thought it was really different. I thought it didn't fit with anything else. So you do have that. Yeah, and you do judge yourself. And there's something else I was thinking about with this emotion thing. I've always had this pressure in the back of my mind that if I want to paint true, real emotion and really make emotional paintings, then I should actually give them titles which tell people what they're about. And I should, you know, like a Tracy Emin type, her titles make it very clear what's going on in this painting, and sometimes the painting makes it very clear. I should do that, because that's what it would, that would be honest, I think. That would be authentic and honest, and I don't want to do that. I know I don't want to do that. So I've had this kind of push-pull in my mind that, well, then you're not doing it properly, because yeah. you're not really doing it.
Yeah.
But I think I've kind of come to terms with, no, I am doing it my way. This is how I want to do it. I don't want to like take all my clothes off and run naked down the lane. I'm all right just like taking a sock off or something.
And also that will probably change. I bet you anything that will change a little bit. That in maybe 2 years you're prepared to, I don't know,
maybe
time scale on it, push things a little bit further. It'll feel a little bit more comfortable. But so I don't know, what's the purpose of this? Is where do you catch yourself where you've made rules that you feel you have to stick to or you have to live with?
Well, it's very easy to see it with other people, isn't it? So as I bring people into the course this first week, I see it over and over and over again, these different rules people have for themselves. Yeah. And it's very much black and white thinking. It's very much, I've either got to be this or I've got to be that. Or it's very negative black and white self-judgments. Like things like, well, I'm not an organized person, so yeah, I'll never be able to do that. I'm not someone who can let go. I'm very controlled and I'll never be able to. There's a lot of very dogmatic things which the person themselves can't even see in what they've written, but everyone reading it can see, hang on a second, are you not organized in any sense, in any aspect of your life? I tend to say that a lot. Oh, I'm not an organized person. Well, I put together a whole course all by myself, brought loads of people into it, did all the marketing, you know, got everybody in. Yeah, I made some little detail mistakes along the way, but just a sweeping statement that I'm not an organized person is rubbish. So it's, and I was talking to one of the people who's working as a coach on the course, helping me as a therapist, and she was talking about how people do this when they come into a therapist's office. So they'll just say, you know, well, I'm in a loveless marriage.
Yeah. And I never.
Yeah.
And
then you say, well, is it really that way? And then some questioning. Well, yeah, it's not always like that. There are some, yeah, exactly. There are some examples of times when he did put down the toilet seat or whatever. I'm sure people go to the therapist for worse things than that, but you know what I mean? And so what she said is it's really a case of challenging that, which I think is what he's saying, with just questioning it. When you catch yourself doing it, hang on, do I have to always work that way? I suppose one of the things is like when we say in our minds, well, that can't be right because real artists don't do that.
Yep.
Proper artists do it this way. Do they? Like, do all proper artists do it that way? Probably
not. I think that thing of catching yourself and challenging those assumptions and the deliberate black and white thinking is the almost a step before this. What he's talking about here is a broader way of accepting that it's not just one thing that you're catching and challenging. It's this sense of being able to move between two different, not necessarily two different sides of the same coin, but two different extremes of approach that we don't have to choose. So it's not just a statement like, I can't do this. It's much more, what do I need to do this today? And I think this idea is really useful to take away, and it does need a little bit more work. So he's talking about to get on with my meaningful work. Now that in itself is a big thing. What is your meaningful work? What is your job in the studio today? And that in itself varies. Sometimes your job in the studio today is to turn up, not have any boundaries, just make a mess and play. Like if you've got too constrained, you want to loosen up. Sometimes your job in the studio today that's going to contribute to your overall meaningful work is to understand more about color. Sometimes your job in the studio today that's going to contribute to your long-term meaningful work is to spend time reading a book and understanding how another artist developed work over the course of their lifetime and how that might apply for you. So there's all sorts of different things about what is your meaningful work. And the question is, so therefore, to get on with it today, what do I need at this moment? And that is going to vary hugely. It's an allowance for this variation that I think is really important.
See, I feel like the meaningful work is hugely black and white. Like I have to make meaningful work. Oh my God. Now I'm feeling like this huge weight has just come down on me because I have to make meaningful work. And I would say, I don't know, that feels...
Is that really a weight? Why is that a weight? There's a reason why you're pulled to doing this rather than...
No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I get that. But every day when I go in, I have to think, what am I going to do to make meaningful work? It that feels like, I think the meaningful work comes when you show up and do stuff, but the thought of it, like today, I'm going to do some meaningful work, which thing am I going to do?
Okay, so that's too heavy for you. So some of this is around getting the wording right that's going to help you. So maybe for you, the wording just needs to be lighter. Like, it's not, I don't want to put extra heavy words in here. Like, what is important for me to do today? Oh my God, don't make anything important. Maybe it's as simple as what's best going to benefit me today? And following that.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's trying to do in this. It's not just challenging those sweeping statements. It's about giving yourself the license to have a flexible approach to what you're doing on an individual daily basis. Not getting caught in a ring fence little trap of what counts and what doesn't count.
Yeah. But that's why it felt like meaningful work felt like a big ring fence around what has to count. It has to be meaningful that day. And so if I leave the studio having dabbled around and not actually done anything useful.
But that comes back to, so your concept of being an artist means that every day then has to be productive.
Yeah, no, mine doesn't. Mine doesn't though.
But it must do still. If you're still caught in the idea of meaningful work means that every day has to...
No, it's just that it's just that whole thing of meaningful work suddenly puts a thing on it, which I don't normally have on me. I normally feel like if I showed up and if I did what felt good, that was a good day. That's all I need to do. That's what I feel like. And the results come out of that. And if I show up and don't do what feels good, I'll usually get off track and then results won't come out of it. And I've got to get back to what feels good again. But it's just that idea. I'm just being argumentative now. It's just the idea that he's telling me I have to do meaningful work every day.
But it must be meaningful to you. I mean, this is where it's
It's meaningful to me. Yes, because it's meaningful to me to do painting.
Right.
Of any kind.
It's so it meaningful. Is meaningful.
Oh, totally meaningful.
But your interpretation of meaningful in this context is...
I just don't... Yeah,
I don't... You.
Yeah, I don't like that. If he's telling me that we should allow flexibility and not black and white thinking and we should be dualistic in the way we approach things, then I should surely be able to have meaningful and unmeaningful days and both of them should be equally valuable.
Yeah, exactly. No, they are both equally valuable.
Yeah.
So it's your understanding of what meaningful is.
Yeah.
And I think we both do this, that sometimes meaningful is productive. And it's meaningful in, you know, it can be contributing to a much bigger long scale term picture by actually going back to bed and having a nap after lunch.
Well, I'm not doing that, Alice. Oh, my goodness.
Did that on Tuesday.
Not unless I got flu.
It was lovely. Turned the alarm on. Woke up at 4 o'clock.
If I did that, I would feel so groggy and horrible all afternoon. I can't have a nap. I'm terrible at naps.
Oh, it was lovely. I tried to have a little nap and I could just hear Amy at the top of her voice in the next door room. La, da, 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 da. And then she even came in and said, I'm sorry, I'm being really noisy. You're trying to have a nap, aren't you? And I was like, yes, I am. And then she left. And then I had that real lovely, sunken, lovely deep sleep and woke up and felt fab. That was the best use of my time today. I know. It was very, very good. Right. On from naps. So
shall we, have we sorted that out or do we have anything else to say about that?
Really want answers to those two questions. I don't think we ever sort anything out.
And we've always got more things to say.
But key thing then maybe is just noticing where you do it for yourself. Always noticing, always.
And how do you notice? Is it shoulds and can'ts and musts?
Quite often it's those statements. You know where I find it? When I'm writing, or like if you're, maybe even if you're writing a response to somebody in Facebook, or sometimes you're just, it's just thinking, isn't it? It's just what comes up in the process of And I think it's particularly where there's something that isn't serving you, where there is something that is ending up making you feel bad or guilty or lazy in my case, or sad or frustrated. You know, I get this a lot. I get people are like, oh, I'm frustrated. I don't have time to do this, or I've been busy on something else, or something else has come up and I haven't managed to get to it. It's like, chill. It's okay. If you've been busy on something else, that's because that's been a priority in your life at the moment. That's okay. That happens. Of course it does. You know, we're not all going to continue on the same level of things all the time. But I think if you have something that is recurring, and for me it is, it's ideas about, you know, every day needs to be productive, or that kind of stuff. And just accepting that I keep telling myself this stuff and this is not true at all. You know, you can let go of the reins a little bit.
So we have a listener question to discuss. So I shall just pull this up and read it to you. It's from Lance and also Gail. So two people asked this question. Wondering about making prints from original art. What is your process? How do you make the digital image? How do you go from small original to larger print? Do you print your own? How do you say that word? Is it glycis or
Giclées.
Thank you.
Fancy French word, and it basically just means.
In my defense, it's not spelled right here, so I got thrown off. How important are prints to your business? Any insights into this topic would be very helpful. So right. I have to just quickly fess up and say that for years I haven't done this. I did do it a few years ago. I found somebody local who, he was excellent. And what he did, which worked well for me, was he took the photographs. He scanned them and color corrected and did all of that. He had a big professional setup, really well done. And I didn't do limited edition because I didn't think I would sell enough of any one and I didn't know which ones would sell. So he did print on demand for me. So the most expensive part of it for me was paying for him to photograph and color correct the work. Mm-hmm. And after that, each print was very reasonably priced, and I would just send him an order and he would send it out to the person professionally packed and wrapped and everything. So that was an excellent arrangement and I was really happy with him, but I hadn't got my work to the point where really it made sense. Mm-hmm. And I just gave up on the idea. Mm-hmm. And now the problem I always have when I think about this, and I know you've got more experience, so you'll be able to answer all of our questions, but the where I get stuck is, well, which ones should I turn into prints? And, you know, and is it worth all that time and money and effort to make prints? And then my work's moved on a year later and I don't even like those that much anymore and I want prints of the new ones. Yeah. So these are the things I wrestle with. So what do you think? Because you have had prints on your website for a while, haven't you?
Yeah. And the funny thing is, this one of which one do you choose? It's a little bit like, you know, when you finished a series of work and you have your favorite and then often is the last one to sell and you're like, what is wrong with all you people? Yeah. This one is clearly the best one. And it can be a little bit like that with prints. I remember when I first did prints and there was some available and people kept buying this, you know, that one rather than the one that I like. You can be really surprised, and it's quite difficult to do that. And I think I've got some on my website that are like my favorite paintings ever. I'm not sure I've even ever sold one print of that one. I'm like, this is like the
painting,
isn't it funny? And I chose things that I thought would work really well graphically as prints. So it's hard to choose, I would say. My rule for prints is that I never have a print available unless I've sold the original. I don't like to have prints and the original for sale at the same time. So that kind of limits me a little bit. And then when I was choosing, I would just make a selection that I felt would sit well together, because quite often what I find is people buy in pairs. Sometimes I do with paintings. But in terms about actually making them, Yes, finding somebody who will scan them or photograph them and do the repro, because it's not just as simple as having a photograph from your own camera and sending that off to a printer. There are things that you need to adjust in it digitally. There are things that you need to correct for and do test prints. So there is quite, there is a lot of investment up front, no matter which way you look at it. So my
you can't cheap out on that. You can't.
It's not worth it. If you're going to do it, you've got to do it properly.
Yeah.
And that means paying for somebody with the professional setup and all the tech and all the kit that you do not have at home.
Yeah.
No matter how good your DSLR camera is, to do it properly. Because when you take that image, and we're talking about a small original to a larger print, you're extrapolating up everything that's part of that painting. So you've got to have the detail on the texture. You've got to, it's quite exposing actually of your work. I think to make a reproduction of something that's the same size, or making reproductions, for example, if you're photographing your work to put on cards, you've got the capability and the equipment to do that kind of level at home. But for large giclées, you really need the quality in the image. But in terms of, I mean, I've certainly felt, I've had some prints that on request from interior designers have printed up at a 30 centimetre original to an 80 centimetre print.
Wow.
And yeah, well, the image file was massive. But in terms of scaling of the original artwork, it kind of looked awesome. But it felt off to me because I knew the original.
Yeah.
I don't think she felt that.
Yeah.
But it felt off. Like, I know how the marks were made and the scale felt off. And I know that the company that I work with, who licenses some work now, they have a kind of general rule that they don't more than double from the original. So that's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because often you'll see people will blow up their picture in these apps, and they'll blow up a little 30 centimeter and make it into a 2 meter square painting and put it on a gallery wall, and they go, oh, look how amazing it looks, but it really doesn't. It's an illusion, I think.
Yeah,
that you've got, like, it's, if like, you got up close, it wouldn't look good.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about earlier about using those little studies that I did and kind of scaling up mentally into a bigger painting. You can't just take the same thing. It's too simplistic.
Yeah.
And the same thing applies for prints. You've got to have enough in there so that when it scales up, there's still something to look at. But this other question, how important are prints to your business? They're not a massive percentage of mine, but they do add to it.
And I do think, I've talked about this before, I'm not sure if it was on the podcast, that it's important to turn someone into a buyer.
Yeah.
And I don't do prints, but I am starting now to have low cost pieces available for that reason. Yep. I think that if you make somebody into a buyer and they feel safe buying from you and they enjoy the painting or print they get from you, who knows, they might be a buyer of an original a few years down the road when they can afford it or feel more in a position to do that. And it's something like 20 times more likely someone is to buy from you one when they've bought from you before. So I think prints are good for that reason, but I'm preaching about something I don't do. But I do think, but it's never going to be, unless you, I suppose it's like anything, unless you put your whole effort into having a print business,
yep,
in which case I was going to say it's never going to be your main source of income. But
I think it can be.
Yeah, it totally could be. Mm-hmm. But you have to go all in, and it can't be an afterthought to the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, Lance, you have to decide in that sense, right, how much time and effort and money do you want to invest in that side of it? Is it a little extra side income and converts somebody into a buyer for future?
Yep.
Or is it the main function of what you want to do, in which case there's a whole other way of approaching it?
And I can definitely back that up, in the sense that I can see that there are people who have bought prints and then gone on to buy originals later, and sometimes vice versa. So sometimes somebody will buy an original first and then they'll come back and they'll buy prints for a different situation or gift or another room in their house or something that. So there is that interlinking space, but I think you've got it spot on with that energy. And I decided fairly early on that, you know, the reason for having prints there was a way that people could buy in when I wasn't making work on paper. It's not something that I do that much. I tend to just work on the painting. That might change at some point, but actually having done that investment work that we just spoke about doesn't do me any harm having them on my website. But what I can tell you is when I don't do any active promotion of them, when I don't talk about them, they kind of sit there quite happily, and every so often an order comes through and that's nice. You've got to be behind them, I think, energetically and talking about them. And at the beginning you said, well, what about, you know, older pieces? And while somebody looking at your website might not necessarily know that they're older pieces, they're older pieces to me. Mm. So my energy, my focus, my thought is on the work that I'm doing now. That's what I want to be spending my time talking about. So I think they are a tricky thing, and they can be seen as, you know, a solution, like, you know, passive income solution. And they can be to a degree, but they are also quite time consuming in terms of, I sign mine. They're not limited, but I do sign them because I don't sign on the front of my paintings. I wrap them all myself. I print something off that goes in them. You've got to organize the shipping, which can be quite expensive, particularly at the moment. Even not huge prints, if they go in a roll, it can mm-hmm. end up being quite expensive. So you've got to do your numbers. You've got to do your maths. Look at your supplier. Look at the price that you would sell a print at relative to what your original work is currently selling at. And I think that that's a thing for many people. If your original work is still priced at a pretty reasonable level, you need to have enough of a markup on a print to cover all of those costs. And if you're not careful, what happens is the price of a print actually gets pretty close to your original work. And that's a bit of a mismatch for me. You want your focus to be on your original paintings.
Yeah, because and why would anyone buy a print if the original is all, you know, is not that much more expensive? I'll just buy the original. So then you've wasted. It's that upfront investment, and that's why it's always daunted me. It's the upfront, and I understood why the printer was charging all the money up front, because the photographing, the color correcting, all of that is what takes the time and energy and effort for him, and then running off prints once it's been done is easy.
The big ones are still expensive. Like, it goes on good quality paper. I mean, we all know what it's like when you buy ink cartridges. Imagine how much ink goes on there. It's not cheap producing.
No, it wasn't cheap. He was very reasonable, I must say. He was very reasonable. And if I was to do this again, I would definitely go back to him, because the prints were gorgeous. They were really, really were. I was like, ooh.
I know.
And he did some that were black and white ink drawings that I'd done into these prints. And honestly, I couldn't tell the difference because the paper was the same as mine. And I found one the other day and I was like, is this a print or is this my original? Yeah. I can't tell. So he was very good. But like I say, it was that upfront investment and thinking, okay, am I picking the right paintings to invest all this money in, put them on my website, and then find out that no one wants them?
Yeah. But some artists do print their own. I mean, Lance is asking, do you print? I mean, I do know artists who have got, they've invested in a printer that will print up to certain sizes at home. I just kind of thought, oh, I don't want to, what happens when the printer goes wrong or the nozzles get jammed? And
And all the photoshopping of the image to get it to look the same.
That's quite time consuming, but I don't mind that. I quite like that.
So it depends, Lance, how interested in Photoshop you are and printer repairs.
Yeah, but it can add, but you need to think about it in the bigger context of where you want to be headed, I think.
Yeah, and where you want to put your energy.
Yeah.
So important. Good luck. I think that wraps up all we've got to say about prints. I hope it was helpful. We have our regular What's Inspired feature.
Which I always forget about.
I was laughing because Alice did a cheering gesture because I didn't say so. What's inspired you this week, Alice?
Oh, apart from my nap.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I am actually that inspired this week. I'm feeling a bit like the weather's gone all drudgy and like, ugh, again, hasn't it?
It has. What have you enjoyed this week?
That's a better question.
Hmm.
I have enjoyed having giggles with people online. I have enjoyed helping an artist. We're on the fourth of booked in series of individual sessions, and she said it's just so helpful. Really enjoyed that. I just think it's amazing how things evolve and develop, and we come round, like it comes round every week so quickly. Like time passes, and I'm just really thankful that time is passing doing things that I've chosen to spend my time and energy on. I like that as a question better. What have you enjoyed this week?
That's quite an amazing thing, isn't it? Sometimes I forget that. And even though it's only a few years ago since I didn't do what I loved every day, I still forget to just stop and be grateful, especially in really busy times or times when something stressful's happened. Like I made a big mistake last week on something, or was it the week before? I don't know. And had to sort out how to solve it. And even then, I was really quite happy, if I think about it, with what I was doing. It wasn't like when I used to work for a chief financial officer and he'd ask me for another analysis of how many people we could fire. That wasn't a fun job. We're so lucky to get to do what we do. And what I enjoyed this week is along those lines. I had a guest artist in my membership site. So Susan's from Nebraska. And it was just such a lovely conversation and so interesting just to hear someone else's process and the things that excite someone else and the things someone else has discovered. And so one of the things Susan was sharing was the way she works with tissue paper stained with very fluid thin paint. And she had behind her this old clothes rack, an antique clothes rack. But instead of, and it looked like there were all towels laying over the clothes rack, but it wasn't towels. It was thin sheets of this tissue paper that she works with and that she's done so many beautiful patterns on. And then she uses that in collages. And it was just, I really enjoyed talking to her, learning about her process, finding the similarities, and then finding the differences. And I know the people listening really enjoyed it, but it was just for me, it was interesting. And it reminded me that when I do these interviews, I always kind of build them up in my mind to be like, oh, and I've got to make this really good. And I've got to remember to ask the right questions. And I don't get stressed, but it's not the most relaxed and easy thing that I do. And actually, when I do them, it's always relaxed and easy because it's always interesting just to chat to someone else about how they work and why they do what they do. So it was lovely. And if you're listening, Susan, thank you. We had a really good time.
And if you want to see more of her work, her website is susanhartart.com.
Well done, because I forgot to look that up before I started talking.
The magic of the Google interwebs.
We do have to just say, before we go, a huge thank you to everybody who voted for us in the British Podcast Awards, which is now closed to voting. But we both sent out newsletters and put things on Facebook and Instagram or wherever, and you all rallied round and were just fantastic. I got all sorts of messages saying, I've already voted for you, or shh, somebody said, I voted 5 times from different emails. But I think that's allowed because I think the Podcast Awards just wanted to encourage tons and tons of people to go to their website and vote and learn about their organization. So I'm sure it's fine that you all did that. But thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We don't know if we've won. We would be very surprised if we beat all those football podcasts.
I don't even know how we find out. We have to find out where we have to listen to something on Saturday, don't we?
Is it Saturday?
I don't know. it's like, I don't know why we're so excited about this, because what will it mean or what will happen? I don't know.
It'll just mean we can start the podcast with, welcome to episode so-and-so of Art Juice, the award-winning, the BBC award-winning. Is it a BBC award? I'm not even sure.
It's not
the
even...
British award-winning, or the award-winning podcast with Ella Sheridan.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
The award-nominated.
I think why we're so excited is that... otherwise it's a fairly relentless thing, like every week it's fun, but every week it's like every week
so,
yeah, there's quite tough. It's quite a nice sort of full stop. And actually we said, oh, this thing is on, it would be really nice, and it was one of you guys who notified us and said, have you seen, you've made it to the top 20. So that was really fun, and your excitement for supporting it as well was really, really, really nice. So thank you very much. Nobody care. We don't care. We honestly don't care if we win or not.
But it would be nice. Maybe we'll get an award. You know, when I watch Ricky Gervais on YouTube, he does a thing on YouTube every day now, chatting, and he always has these, like, all his BAFTAs and Oscars and things behind him on these shelves. And I think it'd be nice if just behind me I had one little award. Maybe we'll get a little statue.
We might have to cut it in half.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much. We will see you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. I don't want to say so. I want to say something other than so. I don't want to say moving along, because I always say that.
Just stop.
So, what's in... there is... What's the word that comes before? What's inspired you this week?
I can't believe we're on Thursday already.
I know. Thank you.